on January the 12th this year, I fell over and smashed my head open through excessive drinking, and I died and had to be resuscitated.
Big,
jaw.
Big what?
No, you said big. I thought
nothing.
Big, big head.
Yeah.
Big hat.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
massive cock. That's what we're waiting for, isn't it?
We've sold out, Lawrence. We've sold out.
Don't worry. I sold out years ago.
Dee, why don't you introduce our guest today?
Oh, I'd love to, Doss. Our guest today is one of the finest and most loved comics to ever come out of Australia. Mm-hmm. For years, he's made us laugh on TV and radio through his hilarious skits, impersonations and bits. Back in Melbourne for the International Comedy Festival, and to tell us all about it, ladies and gentlemen, it's Lawrence Mooney. That's it. Come on.
Come on, lads.
Yes, love it.
Doss, Dee, very nice to be here. We've done a lot of talking off mic, and now it's time to record the genius.
Yeah, that's right.
It got deep for a minute, actually. Yeah. Bloody hell.
Well, we've both lost a father. Do your listeners know about
what
you've been through?
They do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my commiserations, because I knew your father, Dick,
Thank you.
He was a fine man.
Yeah.
And it was a shock when our mutual friend Sue told me that he had died, because it was very quick.
Mm. Yeah. No, it was, it's the first time I've actually been able to, you know, chat with you about it, and I know he was someone that was connected with you in the industry. So it's actually interesting from my behalf when I meet people like yourself who actually knew my dad. It's,
Right, yeah.
It's something I didn't have as a kid growing up. So when you actually have the conversation, you go, oh, shit, you knew my dad, which is cool.
Yeah, I worked with him a lot, and Sue Mason, so it's very sad. But it's also good that we talk about death a bit now and call it death rather than, you know, your father's passed on, or your father's gone into the next room, or any of that kind of euphemistic stuff. It's like it happens to us all. It's something we forget. Mm. And I complain to the camera over there.
Yeah, look at us.
Feels like I'm on a bus. Yeah, it's good to be able to have that chat. So, yeah, my commiserations sympathies.
Well, thank you, firstly, for coming on the show. Obviously, you're in Melbourne for a short time, so tell us what you're currently doing at the moment.
So I'm in Melbourne for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a show called Pigeonhole at the Athenaeum, and I go home on April the 22nd. I guess that will be when this goes up.
Yes.
So for all of you listening, you've missed out. You have missed the bus.
Yeah.
But it probably will be back in Melbourne. The show has been going so well. What is the problem with me coming back to Melbourne is, you know, having lived the first 54 years of my life here, I'm a Melbourne boy born and bred, and coming back as a tourist and a guest, everyone I know wants to come and see the show, but then they want to go out afterwards. And I am fucking exhausted. Because I've kind of like, I live in the country now, and I've decided that I go to bed early when I'm not doing what I do, which is stand-up comedy. I'm normally heading towards bed at 8:30. I like to get to bed early and get up early. So my whole routine's been thrown out. And this show is also about me being a little bit more temperate in terms of not going on, you know, drug-fueled benders or alcoholic all-nighters or getting into barroom brawls or ending up in an ambulance. And it is a show about me being in too many ambulances too many times. So on January the 12th this year, I fell over and smashed my head open through excessive drinking, and I died and had to be resuscitated. So that's what this show's about.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Heavy duty.
We were talking a few days ago about this, because we're really excited to chat with you, and we hear a lot from American comics and the lifestyle that they live. So again, excessive alcohol, drug use, things like that. But you don't tend to hear what the Australian scene is like, and we were really keen to chat to you about, maybe not now, but back in the day, what does it look like post-show typically for a stand-up comic on the road?
Well, on the road's a bit more of a solitary life. You tend to, you know, it's only you doing your show unless you've got a support, and you get off and maybe have a beer and then go home to bed to some very lonely hotel room, call your wife, say goodnight, and try and fall asleep on a pillow that you don't know the history of.
Yeah.
You don't know what the pillow's been used for.
Yeah.
It's been used to bolster somebody up.
It's just like your mind does wander late at night.
It's horrible. You can feel it sometimes.
Yeah. You don't smell it, do you?
Sometimes there's an errant hair and you just go, that is not mine. That's either the previous guest or the cleaners. But a friend of mine went into a hotel room and he rang room service straight away and he said, "I'm sorry, I've got to change rooms." And they said, "What's the problem?" He goes, "Send somebody up." So they send the manager up, quite a high-profile friend. Manager's looking around and he looks at the bed and he goes, "Everything seems to be fine. The room seems to be serviced." And Mick says to him, I'll give you a moment to try and find out what's wrong with the room. You know, one of those compare. What's changed from this photo to this photo? What's not quite right?" And the manager's looking around and goes, I can't see. And then he looks up. There's a mirror above the bed and it's got two hand marks on it that haven't been cleaned off. And he goes, "Oh, I see. No problem. We'll move you straight away."
I think a few of our listeners are probably going to try to sign up for this lifestyle after hearing this. Yeah. It doesn't sound that unappealing.
But I think the comedy world has changed a lot from when I started, and I'm celebrating 30 years this year. I started.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's huge. Thank you. Awesome. Congratulations.
Not a bad knock. And, yeah, it's provided me with a very good lifestyle and a happy life and a great job. But back in the day, there was a lot more kind of slack jawing and stoner work and just hanging out with other comics during the day. And there was, you know, I don't want to sound like an old man, the world's changing, but there was no mobile phones and there was no internet. And so you go around to a mate's place and maybe watch a video on the VCR or play a very rudimentary computer game like Pong on the TV, and you'd smoke a few cones and chat about comedy. Or you'd go down the shops and get a burger and you'd wander around and days were a bit more empty. Mm. And it was before we were all starting to become million-dollar comedians with radio careers and TV careers. And so now everyone is, first of all, very conscious of the phone being used, conscious of their kind of like online and social media reputation. And I think that, you know, in a way, a lot of the chicanery and good times have gone. People are very career oriented and they a lot more kind of like health and lifestyle oriented. So to a certain extent, the alcohol and drugs are still there, but to another extent, it has cleaned up completely and you just don't find the partying as much. During the comedy festival, there is the festival club at the Hi-Fi Bar or Max Watts, it's called now. There's some late nights there. That can be a den of iniquity, a room of mirrors, an Escher drawing from which there is no escape. But nowadays I get out as soon as I can. Yeah. I'll have a drink or two and then I'll just go.
Oh, yeah. Well, wasn't there a little scuffle that happened a couple of years ago or something?
Yeah, that's part of the show. 18 months ago I was...
Daily Mail has got a hold of this.
Yeah, the Daily Mail.
Our good friends at Daily Mail. Yeah.
Well, I think it was, you know, leaked to the Daily Mail by parties unknown, but not it? By me. What happened was after the Sydney Fringe Festival, an obsessive fan came backstage and we had some drinks together and then he bashed
me. Wow, look at that.
What the?
That was 8 stitches in that lip, so... Yeah.
So you had no idea that like he was friendly up until that point?
His girlfriend was with him and she became overly familiar and he flipped and that was that.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I won't say too much about it because I don't want to, you know, reignite the story. But it's one of the stories of misadventure that features in this show. And so I ended up, you know, police in attendance in the back of an ambulance again into another great night and then, you know, have to kind of explain to my long-suffering wife what went down.
How long have you known your wife for?
So we've been together for 18 years.
Okay.
Married for this year it'll be 13 years.
Wow. And what does she do?
She is a tech entrepreneur. She has created online apps. Her company Loop made Chris Hemsworth Center.
Right.
And, yeah, I know that.
Okay, yeah.
And she currently... works with Tiffany Hall on TiffXO.
Right.
And before that, she did Sam Wood's 28.
Yes,
so,
yes, yeah.
So health apps for high-profile people, and
so
that's what she does.
What does then...
She sounds like she's rubbing shoulders with the best rigs in Australia. Bloody Chris Hemsworth and, you know, Sam.
They, and she travelled with Chris when she was shooting all the footage for that's how much confidence I've got in myself.
yeah, sure. I'm going
going overseas with Thor. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, good luck.
Have fun.
He probably looks at me and thinks, I wish I had a dad bod. I wish I had a bit of paunch. Wish I was dolphin shouldered. He gets all the girls. Yeah, keep doing sit ups, buddy. Keep doing sit ups, Chris.
Oh God. So obviously not to speak for her, but what do you think the life of a wife of a stand up comic? How do you manage a relationship that probably a lot of the time is, I don't know, long distant, or again you talk about late nights sometimes? And
yeah. Well, one of the changes in my mind, one of the tricks of the mind that I am now using is, in order to stay out of trouble, is just go home.
Yeah.
Which I know a lot of people have been doing for a long time. They finish work and they go home. So rather than, you know, meeting up with a bunch of guys from Croydon and punching cones on a strange couch until 4
just
in the morning.
Just go home. Just,
why don't you try going home? It's like, well, all right.
It's boring.
That works. Yeah. So I guess, you know, like anyone who travels for work, the partner of a comedian is a widow or a widower, because there's plenty of women comedians who are travelling now, and the husband's home with the kids. So they spend a bit, you know, I spend a bit of time away. Probably the thing is, when we try and nail down a weekend to be social, she says, when's your next free weekend? And it's always months away.
Yeah, right.
The upside is that during the week we're together nearly all the time. So I'm around the house and, you know, we have a lot of fun together and enjoy one another's company. So it's not like a need to escape. But I also think that, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And to have that ability to travel and, you know, tour, it's great to go home and reignite our amazing relationship.
This episode of the Doss and D Show is brought to you by our friends at Fleet Plan Hire Solutions.
Hope you're enjoying the episode with Lawrence Mooney, and we certainly couldn't do the show without Fleet Plan Hire Solutions. Head to fbh.com.au for all your earth moving needs.
Back to the episode. When we messaged you, we reached out to you by the old Instagram DM. You came back and you said, I have to do the show essentially because one of you look like my love child. Which one of us?
I think you.
Is it me?
Yeah,
we were trying to work it out.
Similar eyes. I'm looking.
Is it?
Very
similar.
I think it's, you know, we've fallen out of the same tree, some kind of...
Yeah.
Irish Catholic background.
Definitely.
There you go.
So, you know, big noggin, fair bonds, heavy eyelids, lantern jaw.
Big what?
No, you said big. I thought
nothing.
Big head.
Yeah.
Big hat.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
And massive cock. That's what we're waiting for, isn't it?
That's exactly what everyone was thinking. I'm glad you put the words in our mouths, Lauren.
I didn't want to put cock in your mouth.
No, thank you. No. Personally, no. That's just me, though. Moving on. One of our guests coming up next, actually after you, Lawrence.
Really?
We're
going to a commercial break.
It sounded like that, didn't it? Yeah. Right.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. It's been very interesting. But now...
Can you stick around for another segment? The reason we bring this man up is personally, just a personal opinion, it's my favourite impersonation you've done. So we've got the great Mike Sheen rolling in shortly, which we're very... Oh.
Here we go. Not to jump on this interview with us and you.
Mike's great. I actually did Mike when I had a show on Fox Footy
called
Up the Guts, 2019. So it's been a while since I've done Mike. So there's always a thing with a impersonation. You have a vocal anchor in order to know where you put the voice. Very interesting, Lawrence, what you had to say there about, you know, the voice and the anchor and all that. But really... Who do you think is, you know, the best person to impersonate? And so you've got to get the lips right and where the voice is and the whole mood of the face. So I didn't really kind of start out as an impersonator, but I've always loved impersonations, and when someone nails it, I just loved it. So I started doing Malcolm Turnbull, and my wife said, why don't you put it on stage? And I thought, in a kind of like a – I suppose it was a superiority thing. I thought, oh, you know, impersonators aren't really comedians. She said, people will love it. It'll be great. Go for it. And started doing Malcolm Turnbull, and really and truly, he turned my career around.
Absolutely.
Because I ended up on Triple M every major capital, doing him once a week, and then on the hot breakfast with Eddie, Mick, and Darce. And then ended up getting Triple M breakfast in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. That was hugely successful. And then they gave me my own show in Sydney, and that went for 3 years. And then we had a falling out, a difference of opinion, Triple M and I. And, you know, we settled, and I've signed a deed of release. And so all I can say is Triple M is an esteemed broadcaster.
Yeah, well, I think you were worried for a minute. You might be walking into their studio, actually, where we are.
That's right.
Yeah, when we said the suburb we're going to be in, you said...
He said Clarendon Street, South Melbourne. It's like, I can't go there. I don't think I'm allowed there.
Yeah, there was a police check outside.
Yes, well, no, someone would come and say, you can't come into this building.
Yeah.
But then, you know, management changes and all of a sudden... You know, we smoke the peace pipe, reconcile and get on with it, you know. That's the way it goes in this business.
The impressions thing, that is at the moment, and I'm, like you have kids, TikTok is like all the rage right now, TikTok right. and content. There's comedians that are getting big off the back of doing impressions first online. Mm. Like there's all these comedians that are or becoming comedians but off the back of being impressionists. Have you noticed that?
No, I haven't because I'm not really across TikTok. Okay. So my... One socials platform is Insta.
Yes.
And I kind of had trouble embracing that, but I've got a daughter probably your age. She's 24 and it's like, you've got to get your Insta on. Your content's shit and you've got no profile. And it's the way of the future, apparently. So how old are you guys?
29.
Oh,
okay. She's younger than you. Yeah. She's 24.
Appreciate it, though.
You look baby-faced, but then again, you get up my end of the pool, you can't tell how old people are.
So how old are you, sonny? 42. Oh, good.
Wait, do you do all your own socials yourself?
Yeah. Not all of them, okay. No. So, but, you know, if I'm going to shoot a video, have a little chat to camera, I normally pop that up. Is it that clear? do it yourself? Because I hope you're not paying someone for this. We have got a socials guy that does.
Okay, yeah. Thanks
works
for clarifying.
Yeah. What were we talking about? I can't remember.
Your daughter, TikTok. Yeah.
So impersonations. Yeah. I think it's interesting how all of a sudden there's not only a lot of impersonators out there, but there's just this plethora of comedians. So many comedians. Comedy is a way for fame and fortune, and everyone's having a crack. So what was it like a handful of comedians? You know, it's expanded exponentially. Mm. And social media is the way where I guess a lot of people are getting a following and then parlaying that into a venue rather than the other way around. And I think the first of those was Alex Williamson.
Mm. Yeah.
And he had this huge following and all of a sudden was on stage. And I went along to watch one of his live shows at the Enmore. And his audience, the show started late because they all wanted a drink in a red cup. And
you weren't at the show where he got off stage and bloody no, I wasn't. What a heckler he has.
Yeah, yeah. He had two run-ins where I think someone came on stage and thumped him, and he got off stage and there was an altercation. But no, this was one of the early shows where he was going live, and it was newfound fame, really, probably upwards of 10 years ago, I reckon. And
I reckon I went and saw him almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And it starts with a sketch. And there's a lot of comedians using clips and sketches now and, you know, referring to media. Then he did a song, sketch, some stand-up. It was a really tight, really funny show. And I thought if this is a YouTube audience, they're going to lose focus pretty quickly because, you know, it's 3 or 4 minutes, not even now. It's, you know, 30 seconds.
Yes.
Mm. And they hung tight, but you could, you know, it was like watching, I don't know whether you guys – know of the Muppets.
Yes, and, we do.
And then
know of them. Yeah,
you would see the Muppet audience and the puppets are all just like bouncing around. It was like that. You could just see the heads getting restless. It's like, I need another drink. I was like, oh, I've had enough of this. I've laughed for 40 minutes. And so 45 minutes in, he, you know, that was the end of the show. Bang, his crowd loved it. That was enough. They don't need to be there for an hour. And he was, I guess, the first of them. He was the pioneer of filling venues from social media in Australia.
Yeah.
But the TikTok generation, it's now about crowd work. So they'll film.
Mm. Yes.
It's like they're not even going to do a routine. So I just want a spot tonight so I can do some crowd work and get good crowd work broken down into a good 30-second clip, get it up on TikTok or Insta, and that's where the fame's coming from.
That must be difficult though, because you're relying, it's to some degree, it's a little bit out of your control.
It completely out of control, yeah. Unless you're setting it up. But yeah, they would probably, you know, stand up there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, which is not the way that the open mic is meant to work. You're meant to be up there trying material in order to, you know, give back to the night. So the next comedian coming along, the audience has laughed and there's, you know, some kind of continuity, rather than I'm going to get up there, I'm just going to do a fishing exercise until I get a piece of gold. Mm. I think it's bullshit.
Mm.
I think it's lazy and stupid. There you go. I've said it. I got scared then of the future coming for me. Couldn't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah, but it makes so much sense because even there's a couple that I've been trapped on TikTok, and I've gone to their pages and I've watched it purely because the interaction with the crowd is probably the funniest material they've got. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't see any other material of theirs on their pages other than the interactions, like the actual of their own material.
Yeah, having said that, I'm not really a crowd work kind of a guy. So when it really works, it is quite amazing. So I've seen some clips where you go, oh, that's very good.
Yeah.
your name got brought up actually with my sister the other day. We went and saw Aaron Chen.
Yes.
At the Palais. He was very good. We saw you at the Palais, I reckon, nearly. It was almost the last gig I went to with my dad, and it was like a gala for Russ Gilbert.
Oh, right.
And yeah, it was a pisser.
I was quite refreshed that night. I had a lot of refreshments and I was very refreshed. In fact, I think Luke Darcy and some Mick Malloy was there from Triple M. I think Mick was MC.
Yeah, he was.
And so they said, so who was the most refreshed? He goes, oh, the Moon Man. Had definitely become the most refreshed of all of us. Because they said, you know, keep it clean. It's a family thing and, you know, don't do – you don't say don't do to a man who's had a refreshment. He only remembers one thing, do.
Oh, yeah. And you did the old – I don't remember this, but you did the old microphone stand swing, just the whole stand.
Right. Yeah. The old bit of a Whispering Jack. Yeah. No, I can't remember doing that.
Yeah, apparently yeah. So. Whispering Jack.
We're all someone's daughter. Where he would pull the microphone out, kick the stand into the air, then throw it up and grab it. Wow, I did a microphone swing. That is very lucky because I am not celebrated for my coordination.
There you go.
That didn't come out of my hand. And end up implanted in someone's head in the fourth row. More recently, I've been back to the Palais with touring with the comedians, Sam Pang, Mick Malloy,
right.
Marty Sheargold. So three comedians and Sam Pang. Got to give him a clip on the way through. And that has been magnificent. That has just been so nice to what we were saying about, you know, going away and touring where you're on your own. It's so nice to be part of an ensemble. And before and after, to be able to stand around with contemporaries and very close friends and have a great time and then go out to a fancy restaurant and have some drinks. But that has been pretty heavy on the body, I've got to say, that tour.
Bit taxing.
Very taxing. Well, certainly, you know what we could have done with
yes, here we go.
Tour
first plug of the day.
His Dodge is a drink that is your last drink of the night. It's a hangover cure and it's full of all the good ingredients. It was organically developed by the creator.
Yeah,
Braden.
And then they went to Monash University, added some science to it and some letters, and it is Dodge. So how to dodge a hangover. And were you saying something?
We don't have to read the ad later. That's great.
No, no. They're good people.
And they'll probably re-sign now.
And I know they're...
thanks, Loss.
They're in the goodie bag. You said there was going to get a goodie bag.
They are part of the goodie bag, yeah. They are.
Well, you got to be very specific about the goodie bag when you say it to Lawrence Mooney. It's like, we're going to get you a goodie bag, are you? Oh, a bag of gifts. Okay.
Yeah. Goodie bag from the peanut farm.
So, So you were saying, Dos, that this is Dos for two. Does that mean
no? Waidos.
Oh, wait.
Short.
I say Wade. Yeah. Waidos. Dos.
Yeah.
So make the name longer, then shorten it.
It doesn't
back
make exactly sense
to what it wasn't originally.
Okay. Thank you, mate.
So you mentioned Japanese pear juice.
That's not them.
All right. So there's no Japanese pear juice in this. Good, because I'm allergic to Japanese pear juice.
Oh, God. Well, I tell you what, if Dodge re-signed, we know who we're thanking. That was a great little plug. It's like you've done that before somewhere.
I will wear a free T-shirt. Don't you worry about that.
On that. We should have gone with Dustin. What it like being on tour, I'm sure there's been some shocking hangovers. Like a dip. What's your recovery been like? What's your go-to? A couple of Baroccas or?
Okay, I'll run you through.
Or does it start before drinking? How does it start?
So, look, I would say don't day drink if you want to avoid a horrific hangover.
Yeah.
So we have arrived at different destinations, the comedians, and so we don't have a show tonight. The show's tomorrow night. And so if you're going into Perth, you want to be there a day early just so everyone's there. And then you're in a pub the moment you hit the ground. In fact, you come off the plane after a good bottle of red. So we arrive in Perth and we end up in a bar and it's a massive night. So big hangover. Anyway, the way Lawrence Mooney deals or did deal with a hangover, I'm not drinking like that anymore, is the moment your eyes flutter open, get up. There's no point in bed because if you go back to bed to try and escape the horror, you're just going to end up with a whole lot of noise inside your head, berating yourself, going over past mistakes. You're in a chemical depression. So you've got to get up. You end up, you know, going to the toilet, get something to eat and drink straight away. Get out of that hotel room, start walking, and
What I love most, you've told us you've gone to the toilet. I just would have thought you would do that anyway.
Sometimes you might have gone to the toilet in bed. So that's when you really need to get up.
First thing after a hangover, take a piss.
So really seriously take. Because sometimes.
It's the way he was so serious about telling us. It felt like we're back in the personal development days of like.
No, but sometimes you go, rather than you put off that going for a piss and you're just sweating like an absolute victim. And it's the uric acid working its way out of your body. So you got to get up. The moment you open your eyes, start the rebuild. You can go to sleep later on in the afternoon before the gig, but get out of bed. That's my key.
So the next day then you're doing a show. Do you have another beer if you've already had the day before?
It's a good question, but, you know, a hangover is essentially a drug withdrawal. Your body's screaming for alcohol, and if you don't give it, you'll go through the shakes. Normally you just follow on. In the heavy drinking days, it would just be wait till the sun's nearly down. Don't start day drinking. Day drinking's bad. Have I lent on that hard enough? Because day drinking, you got to make this decision, right? You have a long lunch. Do you stop and go through a mid-afternoon semi-hangover? Horror story, or do you keep going all day into the night? It's a tough decision to make.
I'm sure you had some nice long lunches on behalf of Triple M as well, you know.
Yes. There's been a lot of long lunches across the journey and thought, you know, I'll just keep going into the night. And it ends up, you know, it's fun, but it can get messy.
Yeah. I'm interested.
Am I telling you things that you know this already? You know all this stuff.
Oh, no, you went with Dodge. You just went straight into it. So right, I thought, let's talk hangover. Yeah.
So to that, make Dodge the last drink
and you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It doesn't matter which decision you go down, you'll be fine with just a can of Dodge. Lawrence, I'm interested to hear, because you've now been on tour or in comedy for such a long time. How has the landscape changed for you? What are some of the major changes? Have you dealt with frustration about freedom of speech or what you can joke about and people being offended, cancel culture, all that kind of stuff that we saw probably peak maybe around COVID time? It seems to be dissipating a little bit now. How have you seen it? What direction do you think it's all going?
Well, I think the comedy's always evolved very quickly. It's, you know, an oral tradition, and so language and references evolve very quickly. For example, you know, racism used to be part of the comedy landscape before I was a comedian. And so society's mores actually bring themselves to bear on comedy. And so it evolves out of the comic landscape. And same with anything else. And I suppose, you know, transphobia is like this talking point at the moment. And Dave Chappelle and Ricky Gervais have both addressed, you know, transsexuality and people who are transitioning and mocked it for their own ends. And I'd see no point in that because it is kind of punching down a little. But by the same token, you can say what you like. If you have got an audience that will accept you for whatever you say, then fair enough. Do what you want. I just think that it's always been the same. If what you want is laughs, and if your audience isn't laughing at your content, then change. Mm. It's not about being, oh, you can't say anything anymore, or there's, you know, this woke culture is gagging us and it's gone too far. It's about the audience, really, and so make them laugh. If they're not laughing, you've got to evolve. In terms of cancel culture, it's interesting because there's been people who are absolutely cancelled, like can't work because of what they've said or done, and there's been a huge, you know, blow up online. But from my experience in the comedy world, like stand-ups, I don't think anyone's been cancelled. You know, there'll be people protest about what you say or what you think or perceive what you think, and then you can still do your job. I was just trying to think of the example. I mean, J.K. Rowling is a classic one about, you know, talking about getting cancelled and blowing up, but still people are buying Harry Potter books and there's a new Harry Potter special coming out and there's a stage play touring the world. So there's cancelled and there's cancelled.
Have you ever feared going, like when trying new material, that it could provoke something that's either not crossing the line or but getting close to it that could land you in hot water where you may be employed by other companies or like, well, how do you deal with that?
That's probably more to the point now is if there was an online protest, then they start to include your employer in it and then say to people, start boycotting that employer's sponsors if you're on a radio show, for example, and then whoever you're contracted to can bring a bit of weight to bear to apologise. And, yeah, so you're not necessarily fearing it, but you're certainly second-guessing and anticipating it. If you're just working as a stand-up, not so much, but still I don't want to be perceived as somebody who's out of touch or a bully or a homophobe or racist. That's not who I am. So, yeah, I would definitely consider a joke that was, you know, going to cross the line. Mind you, I still don't mind pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
Does your wife think you're funny? I'm sure you have to tell her all your jokes prior to your next, say, tour. Do you kind of go, hey, what do you think of this?
Yeah,
you
know? I run stuff by her. Yeah, she does think I'm funny, but my sense of humour shared with my wife is a bit different from what we do or what I do on stage. You know, that classic, that intimacy between two partners where you've got your in jokes and the fun that you have with one another. She's very funny too. She's actually very funny in a very wry, dry kind of a way. And also she loves a bit of shock value. So she'll say some pretty extreme shit and I'll be in stitches and it's like, you couldn't say that nowadays.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a bit of fun. Yeah. But, she thinks I'm very funny. And when she comes to see me, she always says, it's just such a relief that you are funny. Because just imagine being married to a comedian and you go along and watch them and think you're not funny.
Yeah.
And I've got to go home and this is a sham marriage, which is probably the majority of comedians' wives and husbands because most of them are not funny.
How do you like – how do you
– let that, yeah, let that phrase just
you just jumped straight in on
just,
like, that. Was
just give that a bit of air.
Well, yeah, we do know a few of them too.
Let's name them. What's your top five unfunniest comedians? Overrated comedians. Here we go.
No. Are we doing it? No.
No, we're not.
We'll do it off air. How does it work when you're trialing new jokes, bits, content, and you think you're on the verge of something unbelievable and then it just falls flat, it bombs? What's that feeling like?
Well, you can try it a couple of different ways, but there's a point where, again, you've got to listen to your audience. And
so how far would you push it? How many times would you try?
You'd try it a few different times and then you'd berate the audience. It's like, that's funny. You guys aren't getting it. And they're like, yeah. I don't know. So there's, you know, you can change the way it's delivered or the wording a little bit or even the context in which you place it. But inevitably there's, if there's no laughs, it's not a joke. It's not no good. And then some nights, you know, all of a sudden you find the way through for that one. Might just be pausing. It might be the way you emphasize something or the point to the joke. But that new process is, it's exhilarating. And when you're doing like a show that's advertised as a work in progress, it's quite exciting to be up there because you don't know where you're going to as well. So you're just kind of riffing away. And ultimately, you know, it's like gold mining or diamond mining. There's a big pile of slag and there's a couple of gems. Mm. So you work through a fair amount of material. And then, you know, you're very long form in the early process. You've got these long, flourishing sentences and just too many words. And so it's a word-laugh ratio in the end, unless you're telling a long form story. Then it's also about crafting the story so you're getting enough detail but not too much. You're not, you know, extrapolating unnecessarily. So it's an exciting process. But of course, being kind of a little bit neurotic, I won't say all comedians, but I am, and you want the laugh, so you end up kind of locking it into position so you know exactly where it's going. And I prefer that once you've got the show, you know, highly polished and honed, which this show is now, Pigeonholes. I did 2 weeks in, well, I wrote it over 10 days in Perth. I had a whole lot of material but kind of honed it. Then 2 weeks in Adelaide, nearly 4 weeks now in Melbourne, and it is singing this show. So it's great. In fact, I've got to trim it because I'm running over. So that's nice too. You end up getting, you get some digressions and then the show grows exponentially and then you've just got to trim it.
There it is.
There it is. So I am coming up to the end of my Melbourne run on the 22nd of April, which is my birthday. You don't have to get a present or a card. Just relax, okay? Get a goodie bag coming. In Sydney on the 4th of May and then Brisbane, which is selling very quickly on 16th to the 19th of May.
Just the one night in Sydney.
Just the one night. So yeah. I presume that must be a massive venue.
SCG, O2
Stadium.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite crowd by any chance or a favourite place you go for whatever?
It's a good question. They're all quite different.
Yeah.
Sydney gives you a huge amount of licence. I mean, Melbourne's my home, so there's a simpatico here that I can't really describe, but I just know the place. And my fan base here skews female from probably the ABC, but Triple M as who has a big female fan base. And they're my age and they're hugely protective of me. They always say, you know, before and after a show, if I run in to Wim particularly, don't you go changing, don't you, you know, start straightening up because of, you know, the nature of society and whatever you want to refer to it as, you know, the woke culture or the cancel culture, you know, you remain who you are. So, yeah, Melbourne's home. Sydney has always been a place that gives you terrific license. Do what you want. And I think that's the Sydney culture. It's very Australian. A mate of mine says when he goes to Sydney, he feels like he's going to Australia. And it's like pretty brash. You do what you want. If you're funny, you'll succeed. So Melbourne's a little bit more considered, if you will, but Sydney's like you do what you want and they'll egg you on. They're a bit more – the crowds are a bit more wild.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So celebrating 30 years, massive achievement. But so before you were a comedian, we obviously went and looked it up. So a customs officer, a cleaner, a salesman, furniture polisher, golf ball retriever.
Yes. Everyone gets hooked on the golf ball retrieval.
Yeah.
So ironically, you'll be retrieving some golf balls in part of the goodie bag.
Good luck golf balls. That is.
Well, I was hoping that Golf Box might stump up some golf balls. Hello to our other sponsor. I will be finishing the podcast with my favourite golf jokes.
Yeah, that's a nice little teaser.
Something about, is it the golf pants joke? Holes in pants?
No. Do you want a little teaser for the?
I'd love a teaser.
Yeah.
Before we get on to the golf retrieval, what club do you play at?
I'm going to say Bembridge.
Is it a public course?
Yeah, don't expect us to say Royal Melbourne or anything. Right, okay. Yeah, these are like Mornington Peninsula kind of hackers golf course.
I was at the National on the Mornington Peninsula. Is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into the pro shop. It was February this year, a very hot day, and speaking to the club professional about the lies. Is that what we say? Where the pins are? And this woman came in and she was looking very distressed. And the club professional said to her, are you okay, madam? And she said, I have just been stung by a wasp between the first and second holes. And he said, I think your stance is probably a bit wide.
As soon as you said
he was on it.
Yeah. That's very good.
And there's another one of those coming up in shortly. Absolutely. As well. Yeah.
Well, golf ball retriever.
True story. But not so much a living or a job, but a mate of mine and myself used to go diving in the dam on, I think it was a water hazard on the Kew Golf Club, or maybe it was another one out there in that belt of golf courses, and, you know, go snorkeling and getting golf balls out of the mud. And then we'd fill a bucket and sell them to the club pro, and he would wash them off and sell them as secondhand, in that secondhand golf ball.
So you didn't have an ABN or anything for this particular?
I think it was before ABN. It was definitely pre-1998, so the GST hadn't come in and the ABN wasn't a thing. Furniture polisher. I actually work with a mate of mine in the Southern Highlands when I've got a bit of time. He's runs a bespoke furniture company called Rabbit Trap Timber, making tables, designer tables from recycled timbers. So just for a bit of mental health, go up there and just labour with him, get my hands dirty, get sweaty, and all of a sudden when you're doing a job like that, you know, you park your minor worries and petty jealousies and professional concerns and you make something and it just feels great, you know. So it's just a way to stop going mental, and you can spend a lot of time on your own in this business and your mind can get the better of you. So you need to get away from it, and nothing like a bit of hard work and loud machinery to do that.
How hard is it to crack it in the industry though? I'm trying to think. So you've worked all those jobs. Do you remember a moment where you might have actually thought, oh, this is the full-time gig now? Was there an actual night or a certain...
It's a hard thing to quantify how to crack it or when it happens, but eventually, you know, you give up your day job. So the last full-time day job I had was high-rise window cleaning. And that was actually a very productive time in my life. I was 4 or 5 years into the industry, and because it's manual labour, your mind's free to wander all day long. So you soap on with your lamb's wool and you squeegee off, and then you go down to the next windows. And so I would write a lot in those years, and then eventually you end up getting enough money to be able to leave your daytime job, and you're not as productive because then you have to – you've got all the time in the world.
Yes.
So to sit down and write, you need a discipline. And that normally is provided by festivals. There's a deadline coming. You've got to call the show something. You've got to describe it. And then you've got to write to that. But there was a point where I got a bit of electronic media early on. I was Denise Drysdale's sidekick on the Denise Show, 99-2000. And so that was the end of work.
Yeah.
Right.
That was the big break.
Well, but I didn't think I've made it. I just thought, oh, this is cool. I've got enough money just to be a comedian.
Do you see in the industry, I've heard somebody talk about this recently too, especially when you're all coming up, like you mentioned some of your mates and everyone's coming up around the same time and somebody might crack a movie or somebody might get a radio gig or a TV show. Is there a lot of, you used the word jealousy before, do you see that within the industry when somebody actually does get that big gig that actually is going to pay them proper good?
Well, yeah, there is, like, I'm sure there's jealousies. I've certainly felt jealousy and envy where you're traveling along, and I started with like a coterie of comedians who have gone on to great success. So Husey, Judith Lucy was ahead of me, and Fleety was ahead of me, but Will Anderson was a contemporary, Corinne Grant, Peter Hellyer, Damien Callinan. So there was a lot of us.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden someone starts doing very well and it's like, oh, when's my turn?
Mm.
And my advice to young people is don't let that happen to you, because all you need to do is work. If you're funny, it's very egalitarian. It's not necessarily a meritocracy. Life isn't. You can be very skilled and doing great stuff, and you may not get the reward you think, but you will get some reward. So it will come your way. All you should do is do your work, ignore what's going on around you. Not ignore it completely, you know, watch your contemporaries because it's a way to learn and develop. But kill the professional jealousy as soon as you can because it will consume you.
Mm. There's a piece of the pie for everyone.
There is. Yeah. There's it. There's room at the table.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it just depends what table you want to sit at too, and that's another thing to make a choice about because if you want to do radio, pursue radio. If you want to do TV, but if you don't know what you want to do, you'll end up saying yes to everything, which was my situation. It's like, yep, I'll do. And I've done some hilariously shit jobs because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. But, you know, that's life.
In what area, though, do you mean?
Is it, a bit of TV, a bit of radio, where it's like, this, I didn't plan to do this, and now I'm doing something that I don't really want to do.
I see.
And I've probably said yes for the money, which is always the wrong reason, but of course you do because Dosh is good. So, yeah, it's good if you know what direction you're going in, which I think a lot of the younger comedians who are very savvy have a vision for themselves. You know, I was watching Sam Campbell the other night. In fact, his show's on just before mine, so he's in the big theatre downstairs. I'm in the 300-seater, so I watch him for a while and he is a fantastic comedian. I would say, you know, verging on the genius and has wanted to do that, and that is what he's pursued, lives in London now, and you kind of get the feeling like you're not chasing one of those radio gigs. In fact, I dare say it'll be the last thing you do, or appearing on somebody else's TV show. I think he's got a very clear idea of what he wants to do. I'm putting words in his mouth, but you can see just by the nature of his comedy, and he won, you know, the Barry Award or the Melbourne International Comedy Festival Award a few years ago, and he's quite pure. Whereas back when I was starting, we were like, it was kind of new. There'd been a generation before us who had, you know, million-dollar contracts on the radio, like Richard Stubbs,
yes,
and Steve Bedwell, and
he's very
Wendy
funny,
Harmer, yeah. And you know, people wanted that. But now I think that younger comedians just want to be comedians.
Did you ever have ambition or to crack, say, America, for example? Do people think that way? And is it difficult for Australians, just purely based on humour, to go and crack the American market?
Well, there's a lot who have tried. And yeah, I did Last Comic Standing in 2007, and so I made it through to the round where I think there's 30 comedians before they choose the 10 to go into the house. And I had eyes on, you know, if I get into the house, I can then tour America and I'm going to crack it in America.
So that's the one where you're not allowed to laugh, right?
Is that Last Comic laughing. Standing is...
that's that one.
That's Last One Laughing, yeah. Last Comic Standing is like 10 comedians living in a house together and then they go and do gigs. So it's kind of like a Big Brother slash, you know, it's a comedy competition basically.
Yeah.
That they happen to be living in a house together. I suppose discussing what they're going to do that week and then going on adventures. There might be challenges and whatever. Anyway, I didn't crack it through. But I've thought about the UK for a long time, and because you get distracted with a, you know, electronic media job in TV or radio, just haven't done it. So I've never really gone offshore. But I want to now. So I've had a British passport my whole life, so why don't I use it?
Yeah.
But when you think about it, a lot more people have tried the States. Jim Jefferies, of course, is massive in the States. Yeah. Few have cracked it in the UK. I mean, Adam Hills is the big exception there. The third leg has been, or the fight, not the third leg, the last leg. The third leg is a Rolf Harris sketch.
Oh my God.
Jake the Peg. Should call it the third leg. Last leg started after the 2012 Paralympics or during the 2012 Paralympics and has been huge. But he had been big in Edinburgh since, you know, well before that. Some of us have done pretty well in Edinburgh and won the big one. Sam Simmons, Lana Woodley, Sam Campbell. So, you know, few have made it in the UK, but I would think the US is probably where most people are, if they're going to go offshore, are aiming now.
I think it's time for Golf Box.
You ready?
Yeah, I reckon we do it.
Is it time for another golf-related joke?
You know what? I think it is time.
Yeah, why don't
I
we do that? Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
So I bought my wife golf lessons for Christmas, and I'm not much of a golfer, but I wanted to be able to go and have a hack with her, and she'd never played golf before, went down to the club profession. I said, Mrs. Mooney, have you ever held a golf club before? And she said, no. And he said, well, just pretend it's your husband, hold like you would hold your husband, double hand, interlocking grip, thumbs down the shaft. I don't know why I'm telling this like Shane Bourne. Fantastic. So Mrs. Mooney, just grab the club like you grab your husband.
That is Shane
Double
Bourne.
Hand, interlocking grip, thumbs down the shaft. Okay, Mrs. Mooney, take the club head out of your mouth and let's get on with the lesson.
That's a good
second
one.
Second one sound better.
That
one, good.
Very good.
Golf box.
Here we go.
Do you want to explain?
I'll explain the rules.
Golf, go to the golf box.
They're the best. They are the best. Essentially, the golf box, we have a bunch of challenges, questions, and you're going to dip your hand in there, pull one out at random.
Right. Okay.
And if you do the challenge or answer the question, you might win yourself a nice little goodie.
But before we do, what's in the golf box? What's in the golf box is brought to you by our good friends at Golf Box, Australia's greatest golf superstore. If you need it, they have it. And it gets to you fast and free. Shop online now at golfbox.com.au.
Is there sale still on at the moment?
It's just ended by the time just if you get in before your birthday, I mean, this is no relevance to the listeners, but the present you're going to get today, if you get in the next 6 days, you'll double the value.
50% off store wide it is. So yeah.
I was recently given a pair of pants, and they're golf pants, and they're the comfiest pants I've ever worn.
Really?
Clutch.
Clutch and Co. Yeah.
Yeah, Clutch. Oh.
Competitor.
They are. They're not available. You can't buy Clutch at Golf Box.
Maybe we could search that up.
Do you know what? Yeah. Golf Box have probably got more comfy pants.
So let's have a look. What's in the Golf Box?
I reckon Clutch is on there.
Yeah, Clutch might be on there. Let's have a look.
Oh, let's have a look.
Are they on there, boys?
If not, we'll cut this part out.
There's some Adidas. There's Puma.
It looks comfy regardless, doesn't it, Doss?
Yeah, those golf pants do look good.
Oh, this is good. Good question. I'm just going to look. So the question is that I pulled out of the golf box, what's the dumbest injury you've given yourself? Wow, what a list. I mean, does falling over blind in the street in Barrel and smashing your head open and having to be resuscitated, does that qualify? I'd say that's
I don't want to laugh at that though.
It's life threatening, but I'm back. Yeah. I'm back in the room and I'm changed. I am wiser for the experience. But I've hurt myself in many ways. I was born with a hole in my right eardrum, and so I had inner ear problems all my life. And so I've actually got poor balance, only exacerbated by alcohol. So I'm that guy, you know, you see the guy stumbling into stuff.
The one-way fall.
And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then the little pedal to try and get back. No, he's gone. And so...
Unfortunately, we've witnessed somebody do that, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been blessed with a very hard skull because I've been... if you shaved my head, it'd be crisscrossed with scars. Like, I think, has he been self-harming, health... farming. Has he been self-harming or has he been whipped on his head? Why is there so many scars on his head? So, yeah, I should never have drunk, really. It's been a terrible journey. Oh, no, this is the dumbest one. And I actually saw an Instagram reel, which is things went bad when Mum tried VR for the first time. Oh, have you seen that one where she runs and smashes into the microwave? Well, I was at a mate's place and he said, let's try virtual reality. And we were just as high as kites. And he puts it on and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And it's the beginner thing where he goes, just lean forward and you fly off the thing. And so I leant forward and I'm running and I smashed into the wall and I could hear him coming across the room behind me. He's like, oh, my God, are you okay? And I pull the thing off and I've just cut my nose.
Oh.
End up with black eyes because I'd smashed my nose into the, you know, into the wall via the goggles. And he goes, oh, Christ, thank God you're alive. I thought you'd broken your neck.
Oh, my God.
Because that's how hard I hit the wall. Oh, and so my head stopped and my body kept going and I just dropped.
I thought you were going to say, I hope that the goggles okay? You know, that was that yeah, his yeah, first no, thing.
He's looking at my face and then he's, I can see him out the corner of his eyes checking out the goggles.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, there was one we wouldn't normally do this, but there is one in there that I think's only been pulled out once and it was a bit of a poor attempt, but you would have been perfect for it. One of the challenges, impersonate a celebrity. Who would you, if you were to pull that out, who would you impersonate? Who's your go-to?
Well, Malcolm Turnbull was so good for me. Malcolm, I started doing him in 2015 and he was during the Q&A years when Tony was the Prime Minister and Malcolm was actually aspiring to become the Prime Minister. And I'd be sitting on the couch watching Q&A and my wife would say, you've nailed him, you've got him. And I'd say, I know, I love it. I love the way he enunciates everything. He's got wonderful syntax and a great vocabulary and he enjoys pronouncing all of the letters in all of the words. My favourite month of the year is February. That's the time that I go swimming in the ocean with Lucy. And it's terrific. I used to be Minister for the Environment. And when a word's got two N's, why would you ignore one of them? It's environment. And so I've quite enjoyed pronouncing all of the letters in all the words. And Malcolm really, he bought me a wonderful house. So thank you. And I moved to Sydney to work for Triple M and then I realised that when you're in the eastern suburbs, this is actually the way people speak. I went into a coffee shop and ordered a double shot latte and the barista was in there and he was very light in the loafers. And I said, he handed me my coffee and I said, good on you. And he goes, no, good on you. I felt like King Shit of Turd Island and I popped the collar on my polo and I walked out of there and just jumped in some of his Range Rover Vogue and fucked off down the road.
Oh, God, that's good. Well, that's very deserving,
Lawrence,
isn't it?
$250, go and spend it at Golf Box, mate.
No.
Go and enjoy that.
$250.
If you get in now, you'll get $500 because it's 50% off store-wide.
That is extraordinary.
And there's more to come. Do you want to go through the goodies for
and a goodie box.
That's not all.
So our other good friends at Fleet Plant Hire Solutions, they're the best in the business when it comes to earth moving equipment. So that
you're not going home with an excavator.
You're not getting a bulldozer, mate. Like,
you would have definitely done this show a long time ago if that was the case.
Nah, they love their golf as well. Yes. So they've actually created a few of their own little golf accessories. So you're going home with some golf tees, golf balls, golf towel, golf glove,
golf socks.
They're just going to go with
golf lessons for my wife.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But they're, the goodie bag is getting bigger and bigger, and you're going to go home with some Dodge as well.
Yeah, we're going to give you a case of Dodge. So we will say this. If you're looking for a way to dodge rough mornings, just make Dodge your last drink of the night. Scientifically formulated in partnership with Monash University, a can of Dodge contains 100% natural ingredients that helps your body metabolize alcohol, allowing you to have a big night but still take on the next day. Pick up a case of Dodge at your local bottle shop.
Pick up a case of Dodge and make it your last drink of the night.
Simple as that.
Do you know what, though? Just pull up a little earlier and enjoy Dodge and clarity the next day so you don't hate yourself.
People drink it
like water. I had one before and it was actually really tasty.
Yeah,
so, right.
So yeah, we'll send you home with a case so you can give it a good trial tomorrow night at your next gig.
I will...
go as hard as you can and then drink a can.
Don't encourage that.
And report it back to us.
Right. That's what I need.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us, Lawrence. It means a lot to us.
Thank you, Doss.
We really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. And get the Dodge, get the Golf Box.
We've sold out, Lawrence. We've sold out.
Don't worry. I sold out years ago.